now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
Mike, in honor of last night's Tournament of Champions show, as a superstitious tonight for some good luck and some success, I threw my ball out the window, figuring I might get a lot of luck on tonight's show and having a great show by throwing it out the window.
Yeah, there was a bit of that yesterday. There was a bit of that. Welcome, everybody. Good to see everybody. I apologize that we had to wait until tonight to jump on and do the recap of the show. I had to watch my daughters crush the dance competition, win all kinds of awards. So it was a great weekend. I also crushed the poker tables over the weekend. So good weekend all in all. I did catch the show. I caught it late. I wasn't able to watch it live. They did have it on at a couple TVs at the casino. And as I was walking back and forth all day between the poker room and the dance competition. I did catch a couple shots here and there of a couple matches, but generally I didn't watch the show live. I waited until I got home. I watched it last night. And then what I was seeing was so surreal. I had to go back and watch it again today before we came on the show. So the show is fresh in my mind. I'll still make mistakes about what goes on the show because I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready to talk about this show. I'm ready to. I got hot takes galore on this, John. So what do you want? I mean, where do we want to go? There is no league review tonight. Last Tuesday, my daughter had a soccer game, so I did not bowl again for the second week in a row. I am bowling tomorrow. We are getting kicked out by Bolero, unless we can either get more people and do a 3-person team league, which isn't likely to happen, or they've offered us that we could do doubles, but we have to bowl 6 on a pair. Bolero does not want leagues that are less than 3 people per lane.
6 on a pair isn't bad to do. I would
right,
do that.
But how do you work the competition?
So like, don't make it a doubles league. Make it a triples league.
But then we'd all have enough teams.
Well, I mean, it's better than not bowling.
I know. I hear you. You know, I mean, is it worth it to bowl a league with 6 teams though?
Yeah, you're just bowling for practice. It's a practice league, dude.
I guess you have a point. I guess how many
teams there are. You bowl, you're there to get some experience and get some practice. And you're still going to run your card games and stuff. So, I don't know.
Yeah, we got to give it some thought. We're supposed to have a meeting tomorrow night. Yeah. So,
I don't know.
We'll see.
The GOAT's in the building, Jeff Butler.
What's good?
Little John from the window to the wall. That's what he says that Marshall's entrance song should be. Yo, he should do that on the show next time. It would be hilarious.
That's too good.
Yo, bowling with the, I'm going to say it right, Diablo. It should be bowling with Diablo.
Diablo. Let's see. Nico asking if I'm bowling a summer league. Yes, I am. Probably going to be on house, though, because I have a buddy who wants to bowl with me. And, yeah, he doesn't have a lot of experience on the sports stuff. So, you know, we're just doing it for fun. We get together for dinner and then bowl.
Takes the coming in.
So, yeah, I am getting ready to put something together for a summer league. I'll be practicing on the sport in the summer. I'll also be bowling a couple tournaments over the summer, I think. So I'll definitely be hitting the sports stuff here and there over the summer as well. Go ahead, Rob. Sorry.
Yeah, Adam Miller says Kent got the most breaks and made the least errors, winner by default. I'm going to disagree with that.
That's a bad take, bro.
We're going to talk a little bit.
You said he made the least errors?
I don't know about that. Maybe the most breaks.
Adam, check yourself, bro.
Go watch that show.
Come on, man.
So I got some news about
Thank
my bowling.
You for the support, though.
I think I'm going to try to attempt to throw a bowling shot here in the next few weeks. I hurt myself on January 1st, so it's going on almost 5 months now. So I might take a trip to the Bolero the next
Did your mic go out? I didn't hear the end of that.
It's so weird how my microphone's going on mute by itself. Yeah, I'm just going to attempt to probably bowl a game in the next two weeks.
Okay. Regular weight ball or?
Yeah, I'm not going to drill a lighter ball just to bowl like a – I'm just going to bowl one game.
Okay.
And to really go slow. So we'll see what happens. But
walk up to the desk like, can I get one game, please?
I know. One game. I'm going to walk in with one ball and shoes.
That'll be $14.95, sir.
I'm going to be doing like – yeah, $14.75. One game. Oh, here's a lay next to this newly birthday parties we just put on the alleys and by the way, there's global on too, so that'll be fun. Anyway, Mike, I'll keep everyone posted. No B3 practice anytime soon. It's gonna be me bowling at Bolero, one game really, probably for a few weeks, and then just adding a game until I feel like I can get a good hour in without re-injuring myself, but there's no rush for me to get back because there's some tournaments that are starting up here in like probably after the summer, including like the Asian On and Open. I like to get back to bowl there, that tournament first and foremost. And then CBE has that Cactus event, which is 10K. They usually run that in the summer. I probably won't be back for TAT. That's just probably setting my goals too high, too quick. Okay. So we'll see, but yeah, it'd be nice to just get back and put the shoes on again. They're missing my feet at this point.
No doubt.
Anyway, all right, Mike, let's get in the run the ladder because we got a lot to talk about with this tournament champion show.
All right, let's do the breakdown, bro. Let's do it how we do it. And we'll sprinkle in some gambling talk here while we go through run the ladder as well. I know, Rob. If you're listening to this without the video, Rob's ready to throw up when I mentioned our gambling from yesterday. And you know Rob had a futures bet that I didn't have that actually, got him even for the day. I didn't have that futures bet, so I was not even for the day. But I put in my own bet for the first game, right? And then I Venmo'd you $50 and said, yeah, go ahead, ride with it. Do whatever you're going to do because I couldn't really pay that close attention to it to know when I had the log on to put the bets in, et cetera. So I was riding with you. First game, going into the first game, Rob, we've watched Marshall Kemp bowl on TV all year. Yes. And let's be honest. I'm just being honest. Okay. I'm not being a hater, not saying the guy, I'm sure he's a nice guy, all that. He's thrown a lot of shots out the window on TV this year.
Okay. Fair to say. That's a fair statement.
To the point where I wasn't going to bet on him. Not in a one-game match on TV because you just don't know what's going to happen, okay? So we went with Jason Sterner, okay, straight up.
I do want to talk about Sterner, though, for a second.
Okay, we'll bring it in. We went with Sterner in the over, and Sterner plus the pins. I went with all three.
Yeah, I didn't. I just went Sterner like plus 100 to win. Okay. I didn't take any points or anything.
I took the pins. I took Sterner and over parlayed at plus 375. So
I didn't know what the scores were going to look like. So
I hear you. The over under was low, though. The over under was low, right? It was low that first game. It was interestingly higher for the parlay than it was for the regular over under if you were just betting that. That was weird. And I still think it could have hit, and it would have hit if the game went differently. But Sterner opens up open. I mean, how many times do you see that on a show, Rob? Like, I might be the first time.
So that's going to be
other than Darty. Did Darty even go open?
I don't remember, but it was close because the announcers were Rob and Randy were even talking about that a little bit. I know Rob always likes to take some jabs at Tom when he can. But I guess my criticism of Sterner, I was very, very, very surprised. Very surprised, Mike, that he wasn't throwing urethane. That he didn't start that first match with urethane.
You would think there had to be something going on that it didn't look good, right? Because no one used it.
Nobody, but they were all using it in the league the day before, and they were using essentially the same shot, is what the announcers said on Saturday. So that first match at the PBA Elite on Saturday, they were all using urethane in the first match.
So I was under the impression that Sterner was at least on the left lane going to throw a urethane and maybe on the right lane throw some reactive, because the right lane was obviously tighter by at least five boards just from watching the show, in my opinion, watching where the balls were starting and watching where they were ending. That right lane was a good 3 to 4 to 5 boards tighter. And I mean, look, you know, hindsight's 20/20, right? Like if he knew he was going to start out open. Now keep in mind, one of them was a pocket 7-10, but
that was a good shot. I thought that was a good shot.
I was shocked that he wasn't at least trying to throw urethane, but look, I'm not a ball rep. I wasn't there. I don't know what he saw in practice. Kevin in the chat says he followed Sterner all week and he struggled on the fresh. Kevin, was he throwing urethane on the fresh or was he throwing reactive on the fresh? I'd be curious because Sterner's very good with urethane.
And they're not really fresh.
No, they're not
fresh. They're not really fresh because they get
a decent amount
of time to practice on that TV pair after they're done. So, you know, they're not exactly fresh. And we know that they can get tricky. I mean, Rob, we've bet the unders in a lot of these shows. We've kind of seen a trend, you and I, though, where we felt like if the over's going to hit, it's going to be game one, where they have them figured out.
And that's over first game, under second game.
Right. So that's kind of been the trend that we've been going with. So Sterner goes open, 7-10. Then it looked like he just got quick, and it looked like there was like a speed bump down the lane on that right lane, where if you even got a little bit quick with it, the ball was just going to shoot right, and it was never coming back right. So he leaves that split. Then he leaves the big four, right? And I forget what the third, fourth open was. I forget exactly what he left. And Rob, despite that, despite going open the first four frames, you know, the match was a 10-pin match. I think it was a 10-pin match when it was over, was it not? Do we have the final score of that match?
Yeah, it was like 195 to like 160 something. I'll tell you in a second here.
Okay, so Sterner 195 to 157. All right, so then Sterner must have opened in the 10th, yes?
It was closer than the score gave
it credit. It was much closer than that in the 8th and 9th frame.
So here's my like notes that I took on the match is that Marshall was the difference, and I think we'll see this on the whole show, the difference was Marshall's mistakes weren't leading the splits, and Sterner's mistakes were leading the splits.
The crossovers were carrying.
The high hits weren't
leaving the 4-9.
He wasn't like leaving bad splits when he made mistakes. His mistakes were so bad that he was literally missing the head pin so far to the right in a lot of those shots that he was leaving like 1-2-4s and whatnot. Like it wasn't to the point where it was just like, you know, washouts and 2-8-10s. And Sterner, unfortunately, started out every mistake he made, even when he did make a mistake, he split. You know, and that's kind of what the match was in reality. That's the note I had. But yeah, I mean, I was a little bit surprised that Sterner didn't start reurethane, at least from the start of the match, since they were all doing it from the Elite League. That was my only criticism, but observation.
Question.
I thought he'd be using urethane.
Yeah, so betting wise, I got crushed that game. I think I lost $75 alone in that game because I bet 25 on each one of those. But listen, I'm going to take my shots. When I think that they got it wrong, when I think that they have the wrong favorite and they're going to give me the guy who I think is the favorite in the match at plus odds, and you're going to offer me even money, basically, a little bit minus on plus 9 pins, I'm going to take both. Every time. Every single time that happens, to me, that's like a double down in blackjack when the dealer has a 5. You know, you got 11 and the dealer has a 5. Just put the other bet up and sit back and, you know, see.
I know. I talked about it for days with you, actually. I love Sterner in that first match myself. And I think that was the match. I was
absolutely convinced he was going to win that first game.
I couldn't agree more. I really was confident. So, look, I mean, that's what
and I mean, betting is, right? Did we make the wrong – I know in hindsight we made the wrong pick. Obviously, we lost the bet. But, like, are you going to sit here and tell me that that Sterner legitimately lost that match. I mean, the 7-10 alone, if he doesn't leave that 7-10, if he even spares in that first frame, okay, by the time you get to the eighth and ninth frame, it's a completely different match.
I mean, he lost it in the first four frames. So, yeah, he lost the match. 7-10, it was a good shot. But, yeah, that's the breaks you're going to happen. Sucks it was the first frame. But then, like, the next three shots were awful. They were terrible. He split every shot. So he lost the match in the first four frames, and he still almost came back. And the problem was is he couldn't string them together after that. You know, he couldn't, like, he maybe had that double in the middle of that match, and you thought maybe he'd start, like, seeing it and start getting back into it. And then
it was How many times did Ken cross over in that match?
To be honest with you, I don't remember because I didn't really – when I was – reviewing, I watched it live and I watched it again.
I didn't spend
a lot of time on that first match. I did it.
Okay.
The craziness happened when he bowled EJ. Like, that was the crazy match of the whole show.
Yeah, well, to me, if there was any match that that Kent was clearly, you know, like he was pretty much gonna win the match no matter what, it was the second match against Ogle. Right? Because that was the match where he went front six, gutter, spare next to, right, and then didn't finish the game very strong again, but did enough to keep Ogle at bay. I mean, Ogle was struggling himself. He had a crossover. He missed the head pin twice.
Right.
You know, he missed the head pin twice in that game. So yeah, it wasn't like Ogle had a look that was something that he you could be confident that he was going to get up and throw two or three in a row. If he needed to yesterday. Okay.
Yeah. I think, in my opinion, this, even though, like, Kent, like, you know, seemed like he was struggling himself, to me, this was the best game he bowled. I mean, shit, he shot 260.
Despite the gutter, right?
He shot 260. He guttered any Brookland.
I mean, the gutter was shocking. That was just shocking.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, that's something I would do, honestly.
Yeah, so
go front six and then playing 25, and I throw one in the moat out of nowhere. Yeah,
I watched Kent switch to that radical sneak attack in the 10th frame of the first game, and I text you and I said he's got a good look playing in. They look a lot better playing in. It's going to go over game two,
right?
And that was I was right about the over because I knew Ogle was going to be left too, so I knew they were both going to be left.
Was this the game he picked three?
No, that was when he bowled EJ.
Okay. Was this the game he missed? Did he miss the 3-6-10? But that was the first game.
No,
that was the game against Sterner, wasn't it?
The first game. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're all over. He was all over the place the whole show.
That's what I'm saying. Like you, I go back to. I want to go back to my question for a minute. Like. Sterner legitimately lost that game. He got up and missed the 3-6-10 late in the game to let him back in after the guy went open, Rob.
I know.
If Sterner goes spare and he misses that spare, Sterner gets up and he's probably got a chance to shut him out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, there were major struggles. There were major struggles in these wins, okay?
I know.
Like I said, the one against Ogle, you're right. Most solid score, most solid game, most solid win of this show.
Yeah.
But still threw one in the moat with the front six.
He did.
You know? And still gave Ogle somewhat of a chance. Again, I know Ogle was struggling himself. It wasn't likely. But still put himself in a position where he could have lost that game.
Ogle had a chance after Marshall guttered spared. Ogle was on a strike, and Ogle gets up. And at that point, when your opponent gutters spares after front six, and you're on a strike and you're already down – you need to double there. And what did he do? He missed the head pin. He threw it out the window.
Yeah.
So Ogle had a chance to put some pressure on him, and he didn't. And that was the first two matches for Kent. Every time his opponent got up to put pressure on him, they didn't. So Kent, the first two matches, look, he didn't have the ball pressure free for the most part.
Yeah, you're right. He got the ball pressure free for the most part, right?
He did. The first two got through games. Right. Yeah. So then this is when I text you. Let's talk about this real quick.
Pressure-free mistakes were made.
Yes.
Okay.
Tenth mistakes weren't leading the splits. And I keep saying this, but the second game, he only made really two mistakes that match. He Brooklyned in the second, and he guttered on the seventh, right? Those were only two mistakes he made. The rest of the game, he bowled great. He did. He made the right decisions. He made the right moves. He executed very well in that second game against Ogle, except for two shots. So let's talk about the next match. I text you.
Well, we took Ogle.
We took Ogle.
We took Ogle in the over. The over hit.
The over hit. Obviously, we were shot on that bet. I text you and said, what do you think about riding with Marshall the rest of the way? And what did you respond to me?
I said, no way. Can't do it. Are you kidding me? I said, now you were texting me updates of what was going on. Was. So I only had that perspective. But based on what you were texting me, I thought, is he nuts? Is he crazy? He just told me he threw it in the gutter on front six and let the guy back in the match. Because at one point you texted me and said, oh, if Ogle doubles here, he's right back in it. And I'm like, he went front six and the guy's right back in it. You told me Sterner went open, 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 open. And then late in that game, you were like, oh, Sterner's got a chance here. Sterner's got a chance to get up and take control here. And I'm thinking to myself, my God, how bad is Kent bowling if he's letting somebody back in the match who went open, 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 and then – you know, he goes front six, gutter, and he's letting the guy back in the match. So, my answer was no way. Not against EJ Tackett, bro. I text you back, and I think I said, I fully expect EJ Tackett and Simonson to be bowling for this title. Isn't that what I said?
You did, but I wanted to ride with Kent because I felt like this was one of those shows that it was going to be a craziness, like crazy things going on, and it did. I want to read some comments here real quick. Jared Motors says, something about Marshall's game causes him to throw two or three shots out the window every game. I really like this comment because I feel like this is pretty true. I agree with that. I think Marshall, in my opinion,
on TV. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that Marshall's feet get really fast and it tends to his timing tends to fall off on certain shots. I do really believe that. I could be wrong. I would love for somebody who is – I'd love for someone like Mark Baker or someone who thinks, you know, they have the reasons why he does that. I'm sure Marshall, being a student of the game and being very, smart and intelligent bowler, watches these shows to try to figure out why he's doing what he does. And I'd be curious to see if he looks at the three he picked off the right and the gutter to see what happened.
But here's my question on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my question on that, though. It can't be – that can't be true during the week because you ain't getting to the show if you're throwing two or three shots a game out the window, not against these guys. So it has to be something that's somewhat isolated to TV, right? And that makes me feel like is it more mental than it actually is physical?
Sure. Yeah, but I think mentally causes physical issues while you're bowling, right? Like that's what it is. Your brain is connected to your body, and it's, you know, when you're mentally like nervous and you're putting pressure on yourself or you're not completely relaxed and focused, you're going to cause your feet to get fast. You're going to cause your swing to get steep. You're going to cause a lot of different physical stuff that's going to be bad when you're bowling. And unfortunately, when you're on TV, it magnifies to when you're bowling on these type of conditions and this much pressure. I can't imagine. I've never bowled on TV, but I would imagine that anybody who's done it would say that's, you know, what happens. It's very fast too. The games are very fast. So, yeah. So
we go, we continue our run of the ladder, just like Kent did yesterday. And we go to the match with Kent and EJ Tackett. This was our last bet of the day because we were broke after this. And that's because we bet EJ Tackett and the under. Yes.
Yeah.
We took Tackett and the under this game. And I believe the under hit, but Tackett did not win. So we had another loser on our hands.
Yeah. This match was out of control crazy. I can't really start out and stress how weird this match was. So EJ starts out like, oh shit, here we
go. Bang, bang.
Bang, bang, bang.
I know. Right? And you're like, oh yes. That's what, I'm rewatching the match. I'm like, how the hell did we lose this bet?
Dude.
And I already knew because you told me that he left a 10 pin.
Well,
I missed it.
Yeah. So my note here is Marshall's misses were so bad that he wasn't leaving splits. Right. Ken gets up in the fourth, misses the head pin again, and dominoes right forward. So that makes him get a double. And then what does he do? Parlays that into a four bagger, Mike. Strikes spare, misses the head pin, strikes, and then manages to parlay that into a four bagger. So what does EJ do? EJ gets up in the fourth, 3-6-10 makes it, and then leaves a 10 pin. And something that is completely un-EJ-like misses a single pin spare on TV. I don't remember the last time he's done that on TV. I couldn't tell you.
He's missed some spares on TV.
He has, but not lately. It's been
he's been good, but he has missed some spares on TV.
But I'm talking lately, like the last this year even. I don't remember him missing a single pin. And then he pulls his shoulder out.
Right, he goes to his shoulder, right? And then they start talking about how he's injured. And I wish they would tell us this stuff before the show starts.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, we hear about an injury, right? Like,
right.
It reminds me of like when you start a fantasy football player, Mike, and he's got no status. And then all of a sudden, in 5 minutes into the game, he's on the sidelines and he's doubtful. And they're like, yeah, we knew that he's been lacking his injury. You're like, what the hell? Like, I didn't even know about this. But Nico says he thinks Randy mentioned EJ was hurting. Did he mention it before?
He did, but Nico, I need that information before the show.
That's
like for betting purposes, bro. Like that's why I need the information. Like if bowling is going to be taken seriously as a sport that you can bet on, you can't have something like that happen because people are going to be aggravated. They're going to think like, oh, this guy was injured and they didn't say anything and I lost money betting on an injured player. Now, for the record, I probably would have taken EJ Tackett even if you told me he was injured. Yeah, no doubt.
I wanted to go against the grain. I wanted you to say to me when I text you, F it, let's just ride Kent. Something's going on.
Yeah, let's ride the guy who threw it in the gutter on six in a row. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, who
bowled
260.
Put my money on him.
Who bowled 260.
Yeah, let me put my money on the guy who just threw a gutter, missed a spare in the first game to let the guy back in it, has missed the head pin twice, crossed over twice. Oh, and by the way, earlier in the season, he threw two of the worst shots I've ever seen on TV. Yeah, let's ride with him. Or, yeah, let's ride with him against the hottest player on the planet, the guy who won player of the year last year is probably going to win this year. You're a sicko, bro. You're a sicko. Like,
but
in the long term, you ain't going to make money making bets like that.
No, but sometimes you got to go with your gut. You got to go with the instinct. And that was my gut was like, let's just ride Tackett. He's obviously got something going right now. Some kind of horseshoe performance here that we can't explain. Sometimes in betting, Mike, you can't explain the unexplainable. And that's what was going on.
Oh, it was just variance. I'm not even worried about it. I'm up so much. It's a pittance. I'm glad to give it back to Bet Rivers.
Last time we've been together. You go your way, I'm going mine.
No, no. All right, well, that's fine. I mean, we're still going to discuss, but you can still go your separate way. Nico saying he threw a gutter ball and won the match. Clearly, it's his day. But Nico,
I agree.
Am I wrong if I say
yes.
that's just another way of saying his opponents bowled like crap and didn't close the door when they had the opportunity to close the door?
They didn't have the opportunity to close the door. So, but here's the thing with this match, right? That gets very interesting. EJ looks like he pulls his shoulder out, but then he actually throws a really good shot after he misses the 10 pin on the left lane, right? So you think, okay, it's not that bad, right? He threw it really good. So what happens is but the funny thing is Rob Stone at the time was actually talking about how these weird things are happening to Marshall's opponents as EJ misses that 10 pin. Like literally, as he misses that 10 pin, Rob is talking about how these weird things are happening to Marshall's opponents. I thought that was kind of funny. So Marshall's getting up in the ninth. Mike, what does he do? He picks three off the right and then misses the spare to let EJ right back in the match. Right? EJ gets up, throws a strike in the ninth, now could double in the tenth to force Marshall to double. And I'll be honest
with you. Which he ain't going to do.
He ain't going to do. Well, let's be honest, right? EJ gets up on the left lane on the hooking lane and just cuts it a little bit short on that lane. And he knew it. And he said it, right? 3, 6, 9, 10.
I don't know if I've ever seen so much emotion, so much negative emotion out of him on TV after that shot. No?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he said he's made a comment in the sense of like, you know, you had to just get it there. Like, right. Just, and he knew it. And it's one of those times when you feel for EJ at that minute, because you know what that's like when you have to get the ball right and you just didn't do it. It happens to the best in the world, right?
And a comment there, that was a couple shots in a row on that lane, I felt like, lane.
Right.
That he did that. And I think his frustration came out of the fact that that wasn't the first time that he threw a subpar shot on that left lane that went high.
I want to read James Chef's comment. There is no scenario ever where I bet Marshall Kent to beat EJ and Simonson back to back. That's what Mike is trying to say. But me, look, I'm running the magic, right? Marshall had it was his night. It was his day. Okay. Sometimes you have to go against everything that every ounce of your body that tells you can't bet EJ, like, to lose to Marshall. Sometimes you just have to do it and just say, screw it. Let's go against the grain. And that's what I wanted to do. And I text you. So I don't want to hear it. I'll show everybody that text. I will snap.
I vouch for the text. But can we just for a second just take a snapshot of where you would have been had you bet on Marshall Kent in that game against Tackett? Here you would have been with Tackett getting up in the 10th frame. Okay, I'm serious. You're laughing because you know what I'm going to say, but I'm dead serious about this, son. And I know it didn't turn out this way, but I just got to paint this picture for the people so they understand where I'm coming from, right? You would have been sitting there in front of your TV with Tackett getting up, ball in hand in the 10th frame, needing a double to shut out Marshall Kent after Marshall Kent, who was well ahead in the match, just went pick three, leave the three pit.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You really want to be in that position? I don't care. I'll be honest with you. I'll bet on EJ Tackett and lose the money rather than be in that position. I'll be dead honest with you, because I think it's the better bet. You made the right bet. There were extenuating circumstances in this game. Okay, there were extenuating circumstances in this match with the injury. You know, so I'm writing it off. You can call it magic if you want. I'm calling it fluky. Okay? Fluky magic. At best. All right?
Look, I think we've seen some shows, and I'm just using Bill O'Neill as an example here, right? We've seen some shows where Bill has bowled fantastic and lost, and we've seen some shows where Bill hasn't bowled great and has won. Okay?
I don't ever recall a show where Bill O'Neill bowled poorly for four games and threw shots out the window for four games in a row and ended up with a title in his hand, bro.
All I'm saying, I'm not saying that's I'm comparing that. I'm saying that sometimes it's just your day. Okay. It's just your day.
You're so wrong about that.
Wrong here?
All right. We gotta get off it because we'll debate.
It was Marshall's day, Mike. Everything
no, it wasn't. It was just a confluence of other factors, okay, that contributed to him benefiting from those factors.
It was right.
I mean, really, like, no, I'm sorry. You run that stepladder 10 times, that 100 times. That might be the only time he wins it.
Okay, so he gets through EJ, right? So we finish. Okay, EJ misses the spare in the 10th.
He goes, oh, yeah, no big deal. He goes, pick three, leave the three pin. Yeah, I know. It's something I would do in my sport league to lose the game. I know. Go ahead.
He gets up. He wins. So he beats EJ. Regardless how he does, he beats EJ. Now he's bowling against Simonson, okay? And Simonson's got a pretty good look, okay? They're feeling each other out the first few frames of the game, right? Back and forth match.
Hold on. I want to address this comment real quick. Steph, I said the one game that I wouldn't say that about was the match against Ogle, despite the gutter, right? There was the gutter, but yes, he bowled well in that game. And that game, if any game, was not likely in question, it was that game. Yes.
He threw two bad shots that game. The Brooklyn.
No, I hear you. That's why I said it was the one game that I would point at and say, all right, that was a no doubter. Right.
And he made
that
was a no doubter. The other ones really hard to do after you gutter. After you gutter on the front six, it's really hard to even get up and make that spare, Mike. On that kind of struggle. So here's my thing, right? It was his day. Brian in the chat, right? Thank you. Confluence of errors equals your day. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. So anyway, he gets up against Simonson, right? And I'm still going to make this point. Marshall's mistakes didn't cost him. He left, I believe, a 210 in this match. He made it, right? I'm pretty sure it was a 210. I'd have to go back and see. But he left a split in that match. He made it. All the other mistakes he made, he didn't open, right? What does Simo do in, I believe, the seventh frame or the sixth frame is Simo splits, huge split, right? I think it was a 3-4-6-7 and then gets one. Right. So he lets Marshall right back into this match. Right. Marshall, who started out on the right lane throwing a shiny GB4, makes an amazing ball switch where he goes back to sanded GB5, which he started with. And that doesn't get talked about a lot. Everybody's talking about all the fortune of events and all the luck. Right. Marshall makes a huge ball switch on that right lane. And what does he do? He puts three strikes together, right? At the most crucial time in that match after Simo split.
For the first time in that match too.
Right. But Simo lets him back in the match. And what does he do, which his opponents weren't doing against him? He makes a ball switch on the right lane. And he ends up throwing a triple to then go up about 15 or 16, okay? Now we get back to Marshall going up in the 10th frame, gets probably in his own head again on the left lane, which was his good lane, and throws it out the window again. And is lucky. He was lucky. This time, I'll tell you, he was lucky not to leave a split in that 10th frame. He left the one, two, was it the seven? The 1-2-7? And he gets up, he makes it. Okay. So
miracle.
He's lucky he didn't split in that when he was making those really bad shots, he was just lucky not to split. Because there's so many times when you throw the ball out the window like that and you split every time. And he wasn't.
I mean, shocking that out of all the times he did that in this show, he never left the washout.
He never left the washout, right?
In fact, one time he did it, right? I think it was against Tackett where he went backdoor. Right and tripped the 1-2-4 back door.
Right.
I mean, man, like that is just.
Dude,
it still took errors on the part of his opponents. People that you would not expect to make those errors in those times on that stage, for him to win. Even though he got those breaks, it still took errors on the part of his opponents for him to get the job done. And that's what I found shocking. And that's why generally I think I disagree with your general perspective here. But again, he throws it out the window in the 10th frame and Simonson gets up and now he's got a chance. Serial killer. I mean, how many times are you going to escape the serial killer and get away with it and then make the same mistake? You just escaped the serial killer in EJ Tackett. And now you're going to make the same mistake and let another serial killer come at you. You know, and Simonson gets up, throws the first one, great. Throws the second one, seemed like a really good shot to me. Maybe it was a little bit behind the head pin compared to the other ones that struck, but seemed like a pretty good shot, and he rings a 10. What are you going to do? You know, if he carries that 10, we are not talking nearly as much about all the breaks that Kent got throughout the telecast.
Yeah, so interesting. Kevin's asking in the chat, why do you think Simo chose to finish on the right? I mean, it was, looking back at it, it was probably the right decision, right? Because he threw two amazing shots in the 10th, right? And I'm trying to remember, Mike, was his split on the left lane or right lane that he left?
I think it was on the right lane.
It was on the right lane.
Not 100% sure, but I think it was on the right lane.
Okay. Yeah. But look, yes, Marshall was fortunate and everything fell his way, but he did make an amazing ball switch in the middle of that match. He did throw three great shots in the seventh, eighth, and ninth to put himself into that position where he then threw a bad shot, got lucky not to leave a split, made the spare, and then got up and sat on the bench. And Simo didn't double to beat him, and he ended up winning a major. So it's just, there was, yes, he experienced a lot of fortunate events on this show. Things were falling for him. He dominoed, he Brooklyned, he wasn't leaving splits. But it was his day. I mean, that's the things that need to happen sometimes to win a title and to win a major.
The headline here of this telecast to me is something like, Tackett and Simonson fail to take out Kent given opportunity. Kent capitalizes with major win. Right. And again, that kind of gives you a clear indication of how I feel about the way this tournament went. Like, I think it was more so the errors on the other part of the opponents than it was the clutch shot making or great ball decisions by Kent. You know, I think it was more the fortunate breaks for him and the unforced errors on the part of his opponents that contributed more to his win. And that's why I would say to me, that's kind of what the headline is here. I understand you would feel differently. Your headline would probably be something like, Kent wins major, takes advantage of some key breaks, something like that.
Something like that.
Okay.
Because he did. Yeah, he was parlaying. Look, he was parlaying his Brooklyns. He was parlaying the shots that he was getting breaks off of. He was.
Steve in the chat says, he who makes the least mistakes should win. So who made the least mistakes on this telecast?
Well, I mean, Marshall bowled four games, Mike. So, I mean, you can't. I mean,
okay.
Like, you can't talk about all of Marshall's mistakes. All right,
well, game one, he made less mistakes. Game two, he made less mistakes. Game three, I don't know. Game three, I think it's questionable.
Yeah, but see, Simo's mistake was...
Well, that's game four.
I'm just talking about Simo's mistake. Okay. Simo's mistake paid for it dearly. And Marshall wasn't. When Marshall was making mistakes, he wasn't paying like Simo made one mistake and paid for it. The ultimate price. Right. But Tackett doesn't miss that 10 pin, Mike. We could be talking about a different match too, honestly. Right. So, all right. Well, I think we
did a good job
running that ladder, honestly.
What a show, though. Your brother, also, I wanted to bring up his comment about this step ladder being a great example of why harder lane conditions make for a more exciting TV show than easy conditions. I want to agree with you so badly there, Jeff, and I know as a hardcore bowling fan or bowling fans, we all tend to enjoy the tougher lane conditions. I think that statement needs a caveat of if the shot making is at a really high level. If the shot making isn't at that high of a level and the lanes are tough, I think that it kind of makes for an interesting show for us, for those of us that are hardcore fans. But I think entertainment value wise, I'm not sure that it makes for such a great product. But if the shot making is great, where there's still going to be hiccups, right? There's still going to be splits and misses and things of this nature. Perhaps just not as many. I could do without the gutter balls and the crossovers and the pick threes and all this, right? But given that caveat, yes, I 100% agree with you on that. All right, Rob, are we ready to go through our rundown here?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go?
I was like starting with ride with and not ride with.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with not ride with, who I'm not riding with.
Okay.
I'm not riding with Kyle Troop, Mike. Kyle Troop was 15th going into the last block of qualifying, and they're taking top 24, right, to match play. So this is the qualifying block where we usually see Kyle Troop make a run and get into the top 10.
It's moving right? day.
It's moving day. You're 15th. You got, you know, what is it, 8 games, right, of qualifying, whatever it was. And instead of going to the top 10 or top 5, Mike, he falls to 27th. I think he might have bowled.
I think like he was injured. I think he might have been injured.
He was injured, right? Because he didn't bowl in the league, right?
Right.
But, yeah, I'm not going to ride with him because, you know, a guy who's that – who's I consider a top 5 best in the world at this point, like I would put him in the top 5. You don't want to miss the top 24 of the Tournament of Champions being 15th going the last day of qualifying. So injury or not, it's just going to be a bad ride with him. Because even an injury is just as frustrating as anything to me. Obviously, it's a tough situation for him.
I would not be riding with Jason Sterner.
Oh, yeah, kicking himself.
Want to take that ride? I like Sterner. He seems like an awesome personality. He does. He seems like a we've had guy. Him on the show before, and it was an awesome interview. If you go back and check that content,
yeah, he practices.
That was back in the day when we were doing this audio style only, I think, wasn't it?
Maybe.
Yeah. First interview with him, definitely. Yeah,
we didn't have him on video for sure. I remember that.
So, usually week to week, put me with Sterner. There's going to be some rap music. There's going to be, right. You know, some Henny involved. We've heard all about this. But, yeah, this week I'm going to sit that ride out, Hoss. I think after going open, and then – being so close to having a chance to win that game and get back in it, and then you lose, and then the guy that beat you goes on and basically like gets a lot of fortunate breaks and poor bowling on a part of his opponents to march his way through the stepladder. And I kind of feel like that's one where you're always going to be thinking, what if? No?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's like, well, if that was me, but I have climbed the ladder, like – I agree with that.
Marshall, he's riding with Marshall and EJ because they're great friends and they're driving right to Washington State for the playoffs.
You know, Marshall's going home too for the playoff, right?
Kevin giving a shout out to our guy, Billy O, Bill, saying he was not a happy camper, wouldn't be riding with him. Kevin, I'm sure Bill doesn't watch this podcast, so keep this between me and you. I considered him for not ride with this week, and that's my guy. I'll always ride with Bill, but I agree with you, Kevin. I think it was a frustrating 3 rounds of match play for Bill O'Neill.
I think Bill is more frustrated on the Sixers playoff performance at this point than he is at his own bowling. Especially if, and I'm not going to say my Knicks because I've never been a Knicks fan. But if the Knicks ended up beating Sixers in 5, he's going to be really pissed. He's a huge Sixer fan. I mean, every time I'm with him, he's watching the Sixers game. So, yeah, he's not a happy camper right now. Anyway.
Listen, you can't support an organization that promotes losing for so long and then tries to turn that into winning. You can't do that. You build a winner by trying to win. You don't build a winner by tanking and purposely holding players out, not to mention doing a really crappy job of evaluating who your draft pick should be in those instances and only coming out of all of that with one really good player who is oft injured as well. I'm sorry. I'm a Philly guy till I die, 2/5. You feel Mike, me?
I don't but care.
I cannot about support the Sixers that much.
I don't care about the Sixers. I don't care about NBA.
I just have to say it. I'm sorry. All right. Who are you riding with?
I'm riding. There's only one ride here with, right? There's only one person you have to ride with here. It's Erik Jones, okay? Because not only did – listen to me. Let me finish. Not only did he just come off of winning a title a few weeks ago, but he finishes 6th at the Tournament of Champions. And not only that, when you're in the car with him, you get to – listen to his conversation about Portland, right? On his way
to the title. He didn't win a title. No, oh, he shit, won. I mean,
fuck. What am I saying?
Yeah, he went to the stepladder. I understand why you feel that way.
He won an imaginary title.
Honorary title.
He won the honorary title, right?
Okay.
He finished sixth in the tournament of champions. He got the bull for the Portland Lumberjacks as a sub, right? Had a great performance on TV with the elite level, right? Of the elite league. I think Erik Jones, to me, is this last 3 weeks or month of being there, bowling and what he's doing and making a name for himself. He's in the top 43 right now in the exemption, right? Like you got to ride with Erik Jones, right? You have to, right? Like, to me, like he's having a great year. He just had a great weekend with the PBA Elite. He finished sixth at TOC. I'm riding with him.
I don't know. I mean, I watched that position round of match play, and I feel like, man, he was. I just feel like got to be a little bit disappointed. Got to be a little bit disappointed that you didn't get on the show. I mean, he made such a tremendous run in that last game. And I know there had to be instances that he's looking at throughout the rest of that block or the rest of match play where, you know, he had to make mistakes here and there and you only missed the show by that much of a margin. You know, that's tough. I'm not sure that's a great way to wrap up. You know, I'm not sure that's going to lead to a great ride home.
He seems like a fun guy though, too.
He does. He seems like a nice kid, and he, you know, definitely a happy-go-lucky type attitude. This is a great comment by Tarzan Speedruns. Okay, and it says, "I'm really splitting the middle on riding, not riding with Brad Miller. Not sure if that was the season-changing finish he was hoping for after that last block." Tarzan Speedruns, I feel you. I actually picked Brad and Kyle as my ride with here. I'm riding with Brad and Kyle. Okay, and I feel you, Tarzan Speedruns. This might be it for Brad Miller. He didn't do enough. He didn't do enough to get exempt. Now, we talked already, Rob, about how we're a little bit unclear on exactly when the exemptions end and what can should, because we've gotten different information from some different sources. You know, Brad did not do enough as of now to make it, right? Despite this great run. He went from leading after qualifying to just missing the show. And also made an amazing run in his last game to give himself a shot. If he would have struck out and Sterner would have opened in the 10th, there would have been a tie between Miller and Erik Jones for that last spot on the show, and they would have rolled off. Okay, people saying TOC was the last event, and the top 43 are locked in. All right.
I don't know if that's true, though. I've heard different stories.
Because one thing that we were questioning was the Lucky Larson Masters, right? And we talked about that in a previous episode.
What about the Storm? What about the mixed doubles?
Mixed doubles too, right? And I would imagine, you know, it would make more sense to me that it would be locked in right now.
Right. I agree. But,
you know, James also asking if Brad was exempt this season. No, he wasn't. He had the bowl PTQs. And a lot of times he didn't make it through the PTQs. So this was a really great run by Brad. I'm going to ride with them because I think even if this is it for him, at least he went out on somewhat of a high note. I understand like he didn't make it. Kim and Kyle finished fifth and sixth, you know, best performances of the year for both of them. You know, so it was good to see. I mean, a couple weeks ago I gave Brad a dumpster diving award and I talked about how in his blog, it sounded like he was defeated and, you know, it was a guy who was going to give up and you know, walk away from it. He misses the PTQ here in the TOC, but then gets in because of a couple guys dropping out at the last minute. Okay, and he makes the most of it. Okay, and you know, I just thought it was an awesome story throughout the week. I think even if it's it for him, even if it's the end of the road, I would like to be there for that ride home because you know, Brad and Kyle, they've had a decent run over the last few years, especially with the development of their social media and that angle of what they've been doing. And yeah, I would just think that would one way or another, if it's a sad ride home, Tarzan Speedruns, it's going to be a reminiscent sad ride home. But if it's a good ride home, then it's going to be a really good ride home. So.
All right. Good finish to the segment of that. Not ride with,
Milk Carton.
Milk Carton. it's, in my opinion, Oscar Palermo.
Ooh, that's a good pick.
The only Mike Conner for me. Where's he been?
I don't think he came over to bowl much this year. But I think the better question is, why did he come for this? Was it for the Hall of Fame dinner, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know, to be honest with you, but it was good to see him in the top 16. He bowled actually pretty well in the top 16. Really coming from someone that has been very, very, I've had a lot of criticism of Oscar in previous episodes because of not living up to the hype and expectations that I thought he was going to lead to a lot of tour titles. And, you know, I thought he was going to be like one of the premier players as he came out. We've talked about this. One of the OG two-handers. I think he was maybe a two-hander that I saw on TV before Belmo, right, actually.
Yeah.
Rev rate.
U.S. Open.
You rev rate up. I mean, super high rev rate, right? Super high ball speed. Fun to watch. So he's been kind of MIA. Honestly, haven't seen him a lot. Haven't seen him on any shows. Honestly, it was good to see him in the top 24.
Nico's yelling at us, but I already knew this. He wasn't exempt this year, Rob. Like, if he was going to bowl, he was going to have to bowl PTQs in the season.
Yeah, but now, if you think you're...
I know. I feel you. Like, you're Oscar Palermo. You should come in and just, run over just the whack PTQs. The PTQs and run them over and get yourself right in the field and, you know, right, make another run at it. But I hear. I understand, though. You know, the guy's traveling from a long distance. He's got a family, et cetera. I'm sure he's got business stuff going on in his home country. And, you know, so I get it if they don't want to make the sacrifice to come over here. But, yeah, definitely a good pick for Milk Carton there. I'm going just out of nostalgia. I'm going Steve Jarosz. Ooh. I'm going Steve Jarosz. Hey, I haven't heard that name forever. Obviously, he was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, so he decided to come bowl the event. So I just want to give him a shout, Steve Jarosz, somebody that I remember from watching on TV.
And Flanders.
Back in the day, a lot of Saturday mornings, Steve Jarosz, no doubt.
There's a lot
of new ones. Wasn't really the guy I ever tried to emulate throwing the ball like. But was definitely somebody that I remember watching a lot on Saturday morning. So that says something about how good he bowled. All right, dumpster diving.
I have to give it to a content media creator, the man who I see all over Facebook all the time, Tomas Larsson, finishing 62nd. Out of 68, and the people that he beat were like Eugene McCune and Steve Jarosz and Brian Himmler, guys that are probably, you know, bowling once in a while, you know, coming out for nostalgia. And here Tomas Larsson is, content producer, Tomas Larsson bowling, all kinds of, you know.
PBA Elite League bowler.
Elite bowler, full-time player. You know, I know he was injured a few months back. Good to see him bowling again. I would imagine maybe the injury hard still, right, coming back. I believe he had a broken finger. And that's hard when you're bowling 18 games and you're bowling as much as these guys. If you're not in 90% or better physically feeling, you're going to struggle against these guys. And he struggled, Mike. He was 89 under, averaging 195. So,
Sam Cooley.
Ooh, really?
Dumpster diving gold medal.
Ooh, there were some other choices you could have picked. Kevin McCune was honorable mention.
I gotta give it to Sam Cooley. I don't expect Sam Cooley to perform like that in a major like this.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy that I'm never surprised when he's in it or he's in the hunt or he's in match. I mean, solid. Solid. The guy does a lot of bowling, very solid. So to see him struggle so badly, definitely gotta give him dumpster diving gold medal there. All right, spare shootah is easy.
EJ.
That's the easiest award. It's EJ. I mean, who else are you going to give it to? Like, that spare might have been worth 100 G's, bro. So
I did find it funny, though, that the Rob and Randy were talking about how great of a spare shooter Marshall's been. And then as soon as they were talking about it, he missed the
3-6-10. He flags the 3-6-10, I know.
So I did have to throw that as honorable mention, spare shooter.
All right, so I see you, Hoss. You gave Jones ride with. I gave Jones I see you, Hoss. I think he deserves the nod for this week. Just, you know, great performance, awesome. You know, enjoyed watching him, especially make that run in the last game, which was really exciting. He put max pressure on Jason Sterner. So Haas, I see you. I give him the nod.
You know, I could have went a few ways. So I'm going to give a win and then an honorable mention. We haven't talked about Carlos Granados
on this. Have that name written down right here, Rob.
Carlos, I see you, Haas. Great run at the Masters. Great run.
Great World Series.
World Series. Carlos has been under the radar, sneaky good this year. And I think he's one of those type of guys where you might start seeing him a lot more. And I guarantee you we will see him on a show here in the next year or two if he keeps bowling and keeps at it. A lot of talent in that kid. Great regional player. My brother Jeff in the chat from his area obviously has a great game if he could compete the way he's competing with the highest level in the world. Honorable mention goes out to our boy Trevor Roberts. I see you, Haas. Trevor, man. Young bull. Keep grinding out there. You got the potential.
Those are good. Love his game.
Yeah.
Love his game.
So those are my two I see you, Haas's.
Granados definitely deserves a shout. Like that's a name I did not know before the Masters started, and I definitely know now. No question.
Perfect. Yep. Was that it, or did we have anybody else? I think that was it, huh? That's all the awards, or did we miss anything?
No, we're good. No,
I think we're good. All right, Mike. Anything else you want to talk about before you want to talk Player of the Year real quick?
Is there much to talk about?
Did Marshall sneak his way into a Player of the Year conversation, or is it EJ?
Yeah, he's in the conversation. He's in the conversation, no question.
So let me break it down here.
The conversation is a short one. The Player of the Year is EJ Tackett, okay?
Let me talk real quick in regards to where we're at with the Player of the Year. EJ right now is $229,900 in prize money, 13 events, 230 average, even 230.04.
High average
by a lot, by like 5 or 6 pins, which says a lot, right? And 2 titles, and 11 caches. Okay, Marshall now has 13 events, 169,950. 224 average, so EJ's got him by like 6, and then 2 titles as well, 8 caches. So EJ's got 3 more caches, also out averaging him by 6 pins. So those are to me like, yeah, and then you have Simo, who's 3rd in points, Bill in 4th, and Belmo in 5th. EJ, in my opinion, is going to win back-to-back Player of the Years. He's earned his back-to-back Player of the Years, deserves it. The kid has made to make the stepladder as much as he's made stepladders this year and to win 2 titles, including a major, is unbelievable. And I think this is going down as a legendary last couple of years for EJ Tackett, honestly.
I think that's an excellent point about how many shows he made. I think because he tied Roth's record, right? I think because he tied Roth's record of consecutive shows made, whether it was Troop, whether it was Bill, whether it was Marshall, who really was out of time because he just got into the conversation by winning this event over the weekend, right? And now we're kind of at the end of this run.
Yeah, he was like in 5th or 6th before in points before this last TO. So he was right around the top 5. Like he's hovering around there.
He was, but when you have 3 guys, and he had a title, but when you have 3 guys, who have a major, you're going to have to win a major, right? And he did, but it was late, you know, and he got into the conversation late. But I think that, you know, to my point there, EJ Tackett making the 5 shows in a row, Bill or Troop or Kent, you know, as I explained, they were going to have to do something above and beyond. They really were. They were going to have to do something above and beyond because Tackett was leading a lot of these categories, and he also tied a record by one of the legends in the game. And, you know, he also is the defending Player of the Year. So I feel like if you're going to knock that guy off his throne, you're going to have to come at him heavy, right? You're not going to be able to just edge by him. You know, you got to make it clear that you're the guy and that person isn't. And yeah, it was going to take something, you know, really outstanding from Trooper Bill. You know, probably a win in this TOC, maybe a second place finish, maybe a second place finish. But I got to be honest with you, even if Trooper Bill finished in second, if I had a vote, I'd probably be voting for EJ still. So yeah,
someone would have to win two majors.
Yeah, or at least one other additional title.
Right.
Like at least one other additional title.
Like three titles
and a major. Right. Three titles and a major versus one major and one title. I think you can make a strong argument there, right? Yeah. Because that person probably would have had a shot at earnings. They probably would have had a shot at the points. So maybe the statistics would have looked a little bit different too. But yeah, for sure. Like, it's EJ Tech.
I'm gonna ask a question because I don't know this. I'm not a bowling historian like you. Who was the last player to win back-to-back player of the years?
Belmo.
Has anybody ever won back-to-back player of the year?
Belmo. And Walter Ray.
And Walter Ray. So the only
and I'm probably missing a couple people because you're going back on me here and I would have to go and do the research, but I want to say Roth.
Okay.
Is probably on that list too, and then there might be somebody historically.
Like Earl.
Earl. Yeah. Again, I'd have to go back and check, but I wouldn't be surprised if his name's on that list too.
Because look,
it's a short list, no doubt.
The way EJ's bowling right now, like EJ could – he's what are he's like 31, 30 years old.
Yeah.
EJ has a chance to really do something like amazing. Like he's already has an amazing career, but I'm talking like – could really solidify him as one of the greatest of all time in the next few years, really, if he keeps up what he's doing right now. Like, he is dominating. And there is, even with him not winning here, what he's doing all year, just his full timeline of the last 2 years is just incredible. And the way his bowling and the way he looks and his just everything about what he's doing just is amazing. So we're just sitting back right now and watching greatness, really, between him and Simo and, you know, Belmo kind of on a little bit on the tail end of his career. But it's cool to watch as a fan. So I just want to throw that out. Cool. Anything else, Mike, before we get into worst of the week?
No.
All right, Mike, let's do this.
Oh, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. This was sent to me. I don't like to give sources of people who send me worst of the week unless they tell me it's okay. This was from a new message board group. I did join a bunch of new groups, not so much for worst of the week, but just sometimes you want to get a little bit more of a pulse on what's going on in the bowling world. So I did join like 15 or 20 bowling groups to see what's going on out there. But this was sent to me for the official unofficial pro bowling message group. Okay. The poster is named Paul DeRusso. Congrats, Paul, for winning worst of the week. This post deserves it. I, for the life of me, get really annoyed when I see this happen in a PBA tournament. That is, when a pin comes outside the sweep and one of the player hits the reset, waits for all the traffic to clear on both sides, and then throws the ball down the gutter. Come on. These are supposed to be top-notch professional tournaments run in a class venue, and they usually are. I was a pin chaser for a number of years, a long time ago, and know the process. It is not that it happens all the time, and more annoying when it's in a stepladder with limited traffic. You have a competent pin chaser patrolling the catwalk with the pin hook waiting for the call. And don't tell me it's just as easy. It is not, all capitals, !! My guy is angry. He is upset and pissed off. The pin chaser community, Mike. The pin chaser community will not stand for this. They will not. I heard a rumor on a different message board that there will be protests all across the universities across the country for pin chasers everywhere to protest the PBA on them throwing balls in the gutter to get their own deadwood. Just putting that out there, Mike.
Word to your mother. Get with it. Okay. There were a lot of options for worst of the week this week. I want to thank your brother, Jeff, for sending me a really good, he sent it to both of us, I think, a really good one that I didn't go with, but I thought it was funny, and it was in my back pocket for a while this week. But yeah, I gotta go back to the well that is the King of the Patch Pirates. You all know him, Lewis Napolis. Okay, I got to go back to it. I'm giving him worst of the week yet again. I feel like he's a numerous time winner of worst of the week at this point. This time I'm giving it to him because Storm. This is the title of one of his latest videos, and this video has 6,500 views on YouTube. Okay, gag me with a fork, will you? Storm Lightning Blackout Bowling Ball Review. This ball is going to be a staple. That's all in caps, a staple in the arsenal. I mean, come on. Like, yeah, whatever. When is it? I know. How many staples? Like, I put out on Twitter, like, is it me or does this guy say the same thing about almost every ball? You know what I'm saying? And yeah, a lot of people had comments. You know, a lot of people had had reactions to that. You know,
and the crazy thing is, I've seen the ball roll on numerous shows, and it doesn't look great, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but I've seen people struggle with it more than have success with it. And for me right now, and I'm being honest, okay. And sometimes I'm a little bit too honest, and it gets me in trouble. But the hammer and the Brunswick balls, to me, look a lot better right now than the Storm balls do. And just watching the pro level bowl, right? They do. And it's just, I think it goes sometimes back and forth when it comes to, like, you know, but it's hard to tell because these guys are so good, Mike. I mean, they make any ball really look good. I mean, you could put any brand in Simo, EJ, Belmo, Bill's hands, and they're going to make every ball look good, regardless of what it is. So sometimes it's hard to tell, right, if it's actually the ball that's really good or the bowler. But most of the time, it's the bowler, Mike, in my opinion. So.
No doubt. Actually, it's funny. That tweet that I sent out where I posted the picture, my screenshot of his video, it's got to be one of my most popular tweets ever. I don't keep track of this nonsense, but I just was getting a ton of responses to this tweet. And I was like, man, what's going on with this tweet? And I kept going back to it. Got 12,000 views. It got 12,000 views, 66 likes, and 33 comments from people.
People
about
the Patch Pirates.
People love the King of the Patch Pirates. Well, when you're the king, Rob, everybody wants to come at you. So not surprising. All right, Rob, let's wrap it up.
All right.
Final thoughts here, Rob. I got a couple. One I'll say is I'm disappointed that professional bowling season's coming to an end, and that means that our betting is somewhat coming to an end. We still got a few events left that we'll probably be able to bet and take a look at, but there's going to be some tape stuff, and there's going to be some other things going on that probably won't have betting involved. So definitely a little melancholy for me. I had an enjoyable time this year. Not only discussing the shows and running down the shows with you, but also, you know, getting to bet on bowling like it's a real sport. So it was great. Really enjoyed the season. Wish there was more. Wish there was a lot more. I feel like, man, we're just getting warmed up, baby. We're just getting warmed up, and now it's almost over. So, you definitely got to be on top of your game. Now, Kevin in the chat, oh, my God, Kevin, are we going to go that much degenerate level here to tell Bet Rivers that the PBA 50, we need odds on PBA 50 action?
That'd be amazing.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Kevin, please don't Don't reach out to Bet Rivers and tell them that.
I like
PWBA.
That. Ooh, I like
PWBA. Women's bowling, Nico.
We need to bet on that.
Let's degen over women's bowling, son.
Oh, that would
that's
be
incredible. Something I could get into, Nico. I could get into the PBA 52 and betting on that. Yeah. Let's send some emails to Bet Rivers. Let's ask. All they could say is no. Let's ask.
Why would they say no? I'm sure they had a successful year with the bowling, with the betting, I would imagine. Not on our
not
end.
Not with us.
Not on our end, but.
Salute.
I'm assuming there are other people betting, which I'd like to see some more promotion, though, marketing. I like to see a little bit more cooperation between Bet Rivers and the PBA. And I know Tom Clark, you know, reaches out to Bet Rivers, and I he's trying some things. And the one thing I will never criticize Tom, I will never criticize Tom about, is he's not afraid to try different things and new things. He's, you know, has a history of doing that. And I like that. I'd rather see that than see sitting on the same stuff, right? Or the same type of turn. I'd like to get a Bet Rivers type tournament together where you could bet.
Call it the Sweep the Rack Action Open, son. Justin in the chat says, don't act like you wouldn't bet on PBA 50 action in the Villages next week, Big Mike. Justin, not only would I bet on it, if I could, I'd fly down to the Villages myself and come bet on it live, son. Okay? So, yeah, I ain't denying that. But all right, Rob, any final thoughts here from you?
Yeah, real quick. Talk about a few things. Shouts to Jason Couch for winning a PBA 50 Tour title last week. Great guy, Jason Couch. Always a fun time. You ever get a chance to see him in a bar, hang out with him, have a beer. Guy will tell you stories, laugh. He's the best. So shouts to Jason Couch. USBC Championship. Made some new cities that they're going to later in a couple years. One of them being Greenville, South Carolina. And then I believe it's going to Chicago suburb of Addison the year after. The women's is going to Charlotte in 2028. I just want to talk real quick about the US Open Championship. What made that tournament really fun for me back in the day was being able to go explore new cities instead of going to Reno and Vegas every year, even though Vegas selfishly is the best city for me to go bowl just because my mom lives there and it's cheaper for me to get there and expenses. I remember going to Baton Rouge, going to Tennessee, Knoxville. There was a lot of cool little cities. You could go explore different things, go bowl and try to bowl good while you're there. So it's cool to see USBC trying to expand their tournaments. I do like to see them go to a little bit more in that Southeast area, Florida. I like to see them go to New York area. New Jersey would be cool. But sometimes it's harder to get the cities to bid. I know there's a bigger process than I'm aware of when it comes to bringing the USBC Open Championships. I know there's a whole, money aspect of it and what cities would want us there and are going to build lanes, etc. But it's good to see that. Just wanted to tell everybody, if you're looking to go bowl, have fun, enjoy with your family, friends, whatever, get a group of 5, 10, go to the Open Championships, bowl, have fun, enjoy your time with your family, enjoy the tough, challenging conditions. Some years are easier than others. And then, that's kind of where I just wanted to end.
All right, man. Great show. Enjoy going over this crazy stepladder we had over the weekend.
PBA playoffs.
PBA playoffs coming up, right? PBA playoffs coming up.
Real quick, let me go to schedule. Playoffs Saturday, May 4th is a taped FS1 show that starts 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's taped on FS1. And then Sunday, May 5th, the PBA playoff round of 12 is live on FS1. It says on the website at 9 a.m. Is that 9 a.m. Eastern? Because, Mike, that would be 6 a.m. my time for a live show. So I don't know if that's right or not. And then the PBA playoff quarterfinals are taped for FS1 at 1:30. Mike, the website's got to be wrong here. So if anybody has any notes on Sunday what the schedule looks like, somebody email the PBA and tell them that their schedule is wrong, because how could they be running – a live show at 9 a.m. and then a tape show at 1:30 on Sunday. That doesn't make sense, does it?
Perhaps it's 9:30 West Coast time.
Yeah, but why would they run a live show early in the morning and then run a tape show in the afternoon?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's a weird question. I don't know. If anybody has any idea, I'd be curious. But the website looks off. I'm reading from the website, so I'm not sure what that is. Anyway, all right, Mike. If you reach out to us, sweeptherack@gmail.com. We have a lot of emails. We'll get to it now that the PBA is starting to like
calm down a bit.
We'll start talking about some different things. I'm sure it'll be a little bit of creativity on our end when the PBA is not bowling. And then, yeah, we'll let everybody know when our next airing would be. I imagine, Mike, Sunday night, talk about the PBA playoff shows.
Most likely.
I plan Cinco de Mayo, everybody. Maybe we'll have some margaritas in hand. Have a little fun talking about the PBA playoff shows. So, yeah, reach out to us. Social media. Mike usually does his part. So,
no doubt.
All the platforms.
Love hearing from the people. Follow us on social media. He's at BrokenRob11. I'm at 215th. We're on X, where we do a lot of our talking. Email us. Hit us up. Like Rob said, sweeptherack@gmail.com. We'll definitely be getting some emails over the coming weeks. And, yeah, we appreciate everybody joining us. Appreciate if you're listening after the fact. We appreciate the support. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button. Tell your friends about the podcast.
Absolutely.
We appreciate all the support. We'll talk to you on Sunday.
Later, guys.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.